And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to a chest-bursting episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are...
Walter Vinci.
Romano De Silva.
What we'd like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. In this episode, we will be discussing Ridley Scott's newest movie, Prometheus. But before we do that, it's time for Yay or Nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what each of us have recently seen on our own. Walter.
All right, my first is Gymkhana, is a movie that I remember loving as a kid. Uh-huh. And I watched it now, and though the action scenes are actually kind of neat, I remember watching it as a kid going, wait a minute, who the hell would put a pommel horse in the middle of a town for no readily apparent reason?
Have you seen the IMDb photo for Gymkhana? That's exactly what that scene is.
Oh, really? Now, that whole fight scene is actually pretty awesome. But, like, watching it, like, this story does not hold up.
What's it about again?
There's a martial arts tournament, and this guy enters into it because if you win this martial arts tournament, you get a wish. And the government wants him to use his wish to put a spy satellite into orbit.
What?
I shit you not.
How is the wish granted? Who grants the
wish? I don't know. It's one of those like nebulous things like, oh, he wins. Now he gets to put the ship in
orbit.
Is
there some magic genie that will only
grant the wish? It's like those powerful, shadowy, you know, fight organizers. Yeah, for the nostalgia factor.
Oh boy.
Nay, if you know, it's somebody that's like, oh, okay.
I've never heard of these actors. Kurt Thomas?
Yeah,
isn't he a basketball player?
These are like one offs. The fight scenes are pretty cool, especially that pommel horse fight scene in the middle of the town. Oh, the town called the Crazies, by the way.
The town is called the Crazies?
The Crazies live in the town called the Crazies. And
okay.
Apparently, that's why they have a pommel horse shaped well.
Uh-huh. This is one of those movies that came out in the 80s, like with movies like American Ninja and The Perfect Weapon.
Yeah, yeah. I love on IMDb, people who liked this also liked American Ninja 2, No Retreat, No Surrender, Revenge of the Ninja, Iron Eagle 2, Perfect Weapon.
Yeah, Perfect Weapon was...
Oh, that's funny.
It's in the same vein, it's just... kind of funny now.
I mean, yeah, it's a goofy movie to be sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't like hold up from watching it as a kid to now. Other than the fight scenes are actually kind of cool. And
holy crap! The director of this movie directed Enter the Dragon.
Yeah, the fight scenes are actually really well choreographed for this reason alone.
Wow.
Other than that, I will say, you know, if you have nothing else better to do with your time.
I think a lot of people have much better things to do
than watch Gymkhana.
You can watch Gymkhana. You can join me. With my
so overall you say
overall yay. I mean I specifically went looking for this movie again so I could watch it.
If this was 1985, would you put this in your top 10 list of the year?
Probably. my other yay movie is Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh, I love that movie.
Steven Carell and Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, and it is
Julianne Moore.
It's fellas, if you want to watch a movie with your lady, this would be the movie to watch.
It's a good date movie.
It is a perfect date movie. It's got comedy, lots of comedy, lots of great laughs. It's got some really touching, you know, points here and there. And
a nice twist.
Yeah, it's a really cool twist at the end. I walked into it, not really knowing what to expect. I was like, oh, it's, you know, another romantic comedy, I guess. But then I was like, no, this movie's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
So a wholehearted yay for Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah, it has a good mix of heartfeltness and humor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a nice blend, so you will both get what you want.
Yeah.
And last on my list of yay is The Goon.
Is this with Sean William
Scott? Sean William Scott.
No, it's just called Goon, not The Goon.
Not The Goon?
Yeah.
Goon, starring Sean William Scott. Rent this movie via Redbox because I couldn't find it anywhere else. And I didn't want to wait for
it's
Netflix.
Already?
Yeah, it's already out.
Oh.
I had a blast with it. I thought it was really really well done. I thought Sean William Scott's character was underwritten quite a bit. Like, he's not supposed to be like this.
Well, what's it about?
Well, it's about Sean William Scott is basically, he's a bouncer at a bar.
Uh-huh.
He has a buddy who I think is also written over the top. And he comes from a family, you know, Eugene Levy plays his dad,
mm-hmm.
and his brother's a doctor, his father's a doctor, very well-to-do Jewish family, and he's a security guard.
Okay.
So basically, it's him trying to find out what he's good at, and it turns out during a hockey game, one of the opposing players hops over the penalty box and tries to pick a fight with one of his friends, and calls him gay. in the movie, Sean William Scott's brother is also gay, and it causes him to just punch him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start fighting, but when the hockey player punches Sean William Scott, his hand breaks when he hits him in the face.
Ooh.
So it gives like rise that, like, basically he gets, you know, because of this incident, he gets, you know, pulled into playing semi-pro hockey.
Sounds completely realistic.
Ray Stevenson is not a villain, but he's a foil for Sean William Scott, is another enforcer player that's on his way out that wants to fight him, you know, one time before before he calls the curtain on his career. I really loved every minute of this movie.
Was this even released in the theater?
I don't know if it was ever released in theater.
I remember it being on demand.
Well, it says January 6th of 2012. That it was released. Wow. It couldn't have been in the theater long. You know?
I don't even remember that. I remember it being on demand. That was the only way I heard you could check it out.
Huh. Anyways.
I loved every minute of this movie. Like I said, Sean William Scott's character is kind of noticeably underwritten. Like, he's not supposed to be the brightest guy. But sometimes some of the writing for like what he says makes him sound retarded. And he's not supposed to be retarded. He's supposed to be just like your average, you know, and families are doctors. But he doesn't have the doctors, you know, doesn't have a doctor's, but he's not supposed to be stupid.
Yeah.
And the other thing is his buddy, is in the movie, is way over the top.
Is that the guy played by Jay Baruchel?
Yeah. He's way over the top. He's, you know, constantly like, every single thing out of his mouth is like some sort of sex reference.
Huh.
I was like, you know, they could have easily found like a nice balance between those two, but overall, we'll give it a yay.
Oh, that's cool.
Resounding yay.
Good. So it seems like a good week for you then.
It's been a good movie week for me.
Hermano.
Okay, I'll start with the good one first that I saw. I saw a movie, a documentary called Dragon Slayer.
Uh-huh.
It has absolutely nothing to do with slaying dragons. It's actually a documentary following a guy, a skateboarder named Josh Sandoval, I believe. And I didn't know much going into this movie, except that it was a documentary. And at first, I was a little scared because watching it, it just seemed like unlike any other documentary I'd ever seen, where most documentaries are kind of like someone narrating over, you know, some stock footage or something like that, or you'll have like talking head interviews in documentaries. This one is pretty much, it's almost like home movies edited together. And they made a documentary out of it.
Well, the plot synopsis goes, a local skate legend and new father in Fullerton, California, has to come to terms with the fact that it's time to grow up and be responsible for his son and family.
Yeah, I remember reading the synopsis, and when the movie starts, like I really felt like it was just a clip strung together, and I didn't think that it had any kind of message or underlying themes or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it all came together towards the end when there's like a final shot almost, and it's very poetic, and it kind of leaves you just kind of uncertain. Like, it almost leaves you not knowing what to feel. You kind of feel a little sad and a little happy at the same time for the guy, because he has had kind of a rough time, as you see, and you kind of see his life unfold a little bit in the documentary, just through like watching. It's technically like watching home videos. There's no narration at all. I liked it, though. It was a nice departure from what I'm typically expecting from a documentary. I'd say yay on it.
Now, what made you watch it? Because you said you hadn't really heard anything about it.
Well, I remember, I think it was some other podcast, potentially, or maybe online, I heard, spoiler for my next movie I'm going to talk about, Bellflower. I remember hearing about Bellflower first, and then I think someone mentioned that they liked Dragon Slayer better, and I thought maybe the two movies were somehow similar, or dealt with similar topics. So I remember putting them both on a little list I keep of movies to keep an eye out for.
Yeah.
And I happened to see it. It was on Netflix Instant, and I checked it out right away. And it was nothing like what I thought it was going to be, but I liked it overall. And if you're into skateboarding at all, it has a lot of skateboarding footage. So I'd recommend those people check it out too.
I'm sure they already have.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Okay, so yay on that one.
Okay.
And now my second movie I watched is a movie called Bellflower. Came out last year. You want to read the synopsis?
Two friends spend all their free time building flamethrowers and weapons of mass destruction in hopes that a global apocalypse will occur and clear their one way for their imaginary gang, Mother Medusa.
What?
What the hell?
Okay, that synopsis is very, very, very misleading.
Really?
It sounds like a movie I'd want to watch.
You might. I mean, there's going to be... I think if I cut that movie into like 20 minutes, you would love it. Huh. Everything else you would hate.
Are there flamethrowers?
There are definitely... The coolest shit in this movie is when they're building stuff like that. When they build the car. They build the car called Medusa or Mother Medusa.
Is there like a comedic take on all of this? Or no, is it very serious?
It's very... serious, I think. I mean, this movie is really bad. Almost insultingly bad. The acting in it is horrendous. Like, I mean, it's not... I could typically let a movie get away with having maybe one bad actor that's just kind of distracting, but every single actor in this movie is really bad. Like, they're distractingly bad. I just found myself just really paying attention to them and just how bad they were.
Yeah, I guess this is the director's first movie, Evan Goldell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the synopsis is very misleading, and I think purposefully so, because the movie deals more with one of the guys. It's actually two friends, and one of the guys, I guess, must have had a bad relationship or something, and this movie was kind of his therapy, because he does some pretty horrible things to this, like... girl that plays his girlfriend at one point, and things go bad for the relationship.
Oh, he even stars in it.
Yes.
He directs and stars in
yes.
it. Oh, did he write? And he must have written it too.
He must have gotten friends to be actors, because these people, there's no way they're actors.
Yeah. Does it have independent film written all over it?
Oh, absolutely. They did this weird thing too, where they overlaid some kind of weird effect where it constantly looked like there was like speckles or like almost like just dirt on the screen at all times. I don't know if they were just kind of going for like a really grungy look, but I thought it was my TV at one point, and then I just kept looking, and it would be in some scenes, but not in others. It was just a weird, really weird effect. Like I said, the movie doesn't deal... I mean, when they're doing the post-apocalyptic thing, it's just kind of weird. There's no reason. It's never established why they're doing this, other than maybe they're crazy. Like, they're a little unhinged.
Does it answer any questions at the end?
No. As to why they're building this? No, other than they just... you know, nonchalantly explain that, hey, the world may come to an end at some point. Like, all shit might break, you know, all hell might break loose, and we've got to be ready. That's pretty much the whole setup for, like, why we're building flamethrowers, why we're shooting shotguns at propane tanks. Like, there's no reason for it. And then that stuff is minute compared to all the relationship stuff in the movie. The relationship stuff, I'd say it's probably like an 80-20 split.
Wow.
80% of this movie deals with him having a really bad relationship. It's really weird. It's edited kind of bad. It's just not a good movie. I'd say nay on this movie all the way.
The budget was $17,000, but it grossed $167,000, so it made almost 10 times its budget.
And it's got semi-good ratings. I really don't see what people see.
No, the user rating on IMDb is... well, 6.3, so I guess that is above
horrible.
Average.
I mean, I wouldn't even give this movie... if I was going by IMDb ratings, I'd give it like a 2 or a 3.
I am curious to see what the Rotten Tomatoes score for this is.
I think it was right around the same. Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. It's just, it's not good.
72%?
Yeah, trust
wow.
me, dude.
Is that the critics? Is that the critics
that's
or the
critics.
Users?
That's the critics, and users are
64%.
Which is right around the IMDb. Wow,
yeah.
That's
dude,
amazing.
Put it on your queue, watch it. If you don't agree with me, you're crazy.
Okay, so the critic synopsis on Rotten Tomatoes is, this fevered, stylish vision of the end of the world stitches multiple genres together and marks the writer-director star as a true talent to watch.
Holy shit. Dude, trust me. They couldn't act. Some of the imagery was cool, but it doesn't save the movie, because most of the movie is dealing with this, like... it's so over the top. Like, he has, like... it's just a mini spoiler. His girlfriend cheats on him or something, drives him to this breaking point almost. Like, he's either in extreme sadness or extreme rage. It's weird. And there's some horrible, weird... I don't know. It's supposed to be like a metaphor for something. It's just weird imagery at all turns. The editing was like MTV-style editing. It's quick cuts.
Wow.
And it was just really bad.
Well, so you might want to go and finish off Roger Ebert, because this must show that he's really gone off the deep end. Possibly represents the debut of a one-of-a-kind filmmaker, a natural driven by wild energy... like Tarantino.
Oh my god.
And I need to see this movie to see how
that
this...
is like the most insulting thing you could possibly ever say to Tarantino.
Oh wow.
Holy crap.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm more curious now than anything else.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, I'll say man then. I really don't agree with them.
Don't adjust because of our reactions.
I don't agree with them at all. I think this movie was really bad. I mean, if the acting alone doesn't distract the shit out of you and just take you completely out of the movie, I don't know what will.
Wow. Okay then. Is that it?
That's it for me.
All right. Me. I saw The Squid and the Whale. Has anybody seen this?
Seen it.
Written and directed by Noah Baumbach. It has Jeff Daniels, Laura Linney, and Jesse Eisenberg. Really great cast. It involves like a dysfunctional family. That has, you know, husband and wife divorce, leaving the two children to deal with the aftermath. You know, the family is effed up in this movie. One effed up family, but it's very well acted. I think I love Jeff Daniels, Laura Linney, and Eisenberg. It's like one of his first roles. I don't know. I've never seen him that young. And in certain scenes, he kind of reminded me of a really young Kevin Bacon. It was really odd. but it was a real good mix of drama and comedy. Although, I'll tell you, there's this hilarious scene where Jesse Eisenberg is going to go out on a date with his girlfriend, and he's telling his father he's going to leave. And his father says, "Oh, what movie are you going to go see? Maybe I'll join you." And Jesse Eisenberg says, "I think we're going to go see Short Circuit," because it takes place in 1986.
Yep.
And he's like, "Oh, really? Well, you know, I don't know. I heard about this other movie that I think we all might like. It's... oh shit, what's the name of the movie? David Lynch movie.
Eraserhead?
Terms of Endearment?
No, the one Terms of Endearment. No, the one with what's his face? Dennis Hopper.
Blue Velvet?
Yes, Blue Velvet. He says, "Yeah, I think I hear this Blue Velvet movie is good." And it immediately cuts to the scene where Isabella Rossellini is naked and Laura Dern is bawling her eyes out in front of all this. And then it shows the three of them in the theater. I started cracking up. I thought that was so funny. But it's really juxtaposed by these, you know, really... emotional scenes of this family just breaking up, and it's well done. It's has independent film written all over it. Kind of reminded me of like an early Wes Anderson movie. But if you like those type of movies, I'd say you'd like it. Do you agree, Hermano? You've seen it.
It was so long ago, dude. Really? Even everything you're mentioning, I barely remember.
Really?
Yeah, I do remember just being. It was okay, but it's not, I mean, obviously it's not memorable for me.
Okay. Well, yeah, I give it a yay, but I don't think it's for everybody. But I still give it a yay. My next thing I like to talk about is another TV show. I know last time I talked about Veep, but this is a show that's on AMC. It's Mad Men, and I just finished the fourth season.
Right on.
Because seasons 1 through 4 are on Netflix Instant, and I tore through them in about a month and a half. Well, there's only about 13 episodes per season, but still, this show is so good. It's so good, and which is probably nothing new to anybody who has seen the show. The cast is amazing. One thing I'm so stunned at is how economical the editing is. Every shot and every scene has a purpose in this. It's so tight, so well done. Sometimes it's a little bit odd, because in one scene you'll see Donald Draper, the main character, you know, walking into his office, and in the next scene you'll see him walking into the main entrance to his office building, like the next day. So it can be a little bit disconcerting at times, but it really isn't that distracting. But also, I cannot give enough credit to the set designers and the costumers of the show, because the authenticity of the time period, it takes place in the early 60s. It starts in 61, and season 4 ends in 1965. The authenticity of the time period is so amazing. It's just fantastic. And it also has to do with I'm the budget is directed straight all towards the set design and the costume because there are very few external shots. I think the only external shots are of like neighborhoods in the suburbs or maybe on a street in an alleyway. But there's no, because it takes place in New York City and there's no external shots of New York City. So everything is directed right into the clothing and the offices and the homes. You know, it's just amazing. And the costumes, it's just great. So yay all the way for that.
And now a word from our sponsor. This segment brought to you by LBJ Stank Remover. If you can't stand LeBron James like we do, use LBJ Stank Remover. Use it in the office when shooting the breeze by the water cooler, in the gym, or while watching ESPN. LBJ Stank Repellent. One decision you will not regret.
Now it's time for Trail of Hitches or Trail of Bitches. This gives us each an opportunity to mention a movie trailer that we have seen that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or really makes us want to bitch. Hermano?
Oh, boy. All right, so I recently caught the first Django Unchained trailer. And,
I'm about to smack a bitch.
Have you guys both seen it?
I yes. haven't seen the trailer.
You've seen
no.
it? I've seen it.
Now, did it get you super pumped? Like, you're like, holy shit. All
right, first off, I like Westerns. Yep. And I actually, right before we recorded this podcast, I actually stopped and actually bought the original Django so I could have it in my collection. I couldn't find anything wrong with this movie. I think this trailer, I think it was like, ooh, it's the candy.
All right, I think what might be making me say meh is because right after I watched the trailer, I'm like, all right, let me see what people, like message boards and stuff like that, are saying about them. And everyone was just like over the top. Oh my God, this looks like the most amazing movie ever. Holy shit, greatest thing ever. And there was nothing that exciting about it. It was just like, I mean, typical, like, oh, use a Johnny Cash song, then use like this other popular song. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, Christoph Waltz seemed pretty good in it. Just from a trailer standpoint, and Leonardo DiCaprio seemed a little over the top. Jamie Foxx just seemed like he was playing Jamie Foxx. I don't know. I didn't see enough, except the final shot of the trailer actually has the original actor that played Django, and I got a kick out of that. You know, the trailer closes with them both sitting at a bar, and the original actor from Django, I don't know his name, he asks Jamie Foxx what his name is, and Jamie Foxx is like, Django, the D is silent. And I love that. But other than that, the trailer didn't... I mean, it was just okay. Like, I don't see why people are just, like, getting...
I think you're still soured from...
I'm absolutely not. Bastards. I think he's definitely... I mean, I think he definitely took a down... He's on the downslope a little bit.
Unbelievable.
Dude, you haven't even seen it, and you're, like, criticizing me.
No, you said on the downslope, because you weren't that crazy about...
I didn't think Inglourious Basterds. I thought there were certain parts of Inglourious Basterds that I liked, but I mean, this is just a trailer. I mean, I'm judging it, the movie on the trailer. The trailer was just okay. I don't know why people are just, you know, like, holy shit, this is the greatest thing ever. It was fine. There was nothing to make me go, holy crap, Tarantino's back. But we'll see when the movie comes out. So
Tarantino never left.
He's been waiting. Been waiting.
Yeah.
Walter? Waiting, all right.
My trailer hitch is The Possession, the new Sam Raimi movie.
Well, it's
it's
a production
It's directed by Ole Borondale. Yeah, it's produced by Sam Raimi, and I've heard about this movie a while back. I listened to another podcast called Mysterious Universe.
Okay.
And deals with a lot of paranormal stuff, and they mentioned the item called the Dybbuk Box, and they also had mentioned. On this particular episode that Sam Raimi was making a movie about a Dybbuk Box. Mm-hmm. So I've been waiting for this movie for the past, like, 2 years since I heard the podcast mention this, like, way back when. And The Possession is that movie.
Yeah, I saw this trailer as well.
It's
I hate these kind of movies.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Kira Sedgwick, basically the trailer, they find a Dybbuk Box, which is a box that houses a demon, at a yard sale, and they buy it. And the little girl opens it up and gets possessed. And the obvious, you know, like your typical possession movie, they have to get her unpossessed and get the demon back in the Dybbuk Box.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, you know, the demon is a child killing demon that's Jewish. And in the trailer, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is reading from the Bible, which is not. But
minor detail.
This movie actually looks scary. Like, yeah. I don't scare at movies. I wasn't afraid of The Exorcist when I saw it, or anything like that. But this movie, I was like, well, this movie's gonna keep me up probably for the remainder of the night once I see it.
F that shit. I'm not gonna see
so,
this movie.
So yeah, I'm certainly hitched to the trailer of The Possession.
Okay, good. So you're on board?
I'm on board.
You're hitching your wagon?
I'm hitching my wagon to Sam Raimi's production.
All right, I'll tell you what I'm hitching my wagon to, and I'm going down to town to it with it. Gangster Squad.
Ah, my pick from a couple shows ago.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, dude.
Huh? See?
Dude, I got so pumped up. What a cast. Sean Penn, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, Giovanni Ribisi, Josh Brolin.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I remember talking about this now. That's I remember right. going through the cast, too. Oh, yeah. Marielle Enos, is she the one from... The Killing? No, I don't think so. Anyways, this movie looks badass.
Yep.
1940s and 50s LAPD?
Yep.
Badass. Everybody just go out and see the trailer. I don't want to explain anymore because I'll ruin the badassness of it.
It so, looks good.
Hitching my wagon.
Yay. All right.
And now a word from our sponsor. This segment of the First Time Watchers podcast is brought to you by Slots Lounge and Casino. Whether you're looking for an exciting game of cards or simply a drink to relax away the tension of the day, look no further than Slots Lounge and Casino. With over 50 gaming tables to choose from and 100 craft beers on tap, nothing says fun like Slots Lounge and Casino. Open 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Always liquor in the front, always poker in the back. Slots Lounge and Casino.
Wow.
What's the matter?
Nothing at all.
Onward.
All right. Let's talk about Prometheus.
All right. Let's talk about Prometheus.
Directed by Ridley Scott and written by John Spates and Damon Lindelof, the IMDb plot synopsis reads like this. A team of explorers discover a clue to the origins of mankind on Earth, leading them on a journey to the darkest corners of the universe. There, they must fight a terrifying battle to save the future of the human race. This is Ridley Scott's first foray back to the Alien universe and his first sci-fi movie since Blade Runner. And at age 75, who knows how much longer he'll be directing movies. Do you think this prequel is back to sci-fi form by Mr. Scott, Wally?
It's sci-fi, right?
Uh-oh, you don't sound too excited.
We'll get into that later.
Uh-huh. go ahead. Continue.
I was bored to shit during this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I found myself actually fighting to stay awake in the theater. It lacked all of the tension and the fright factor of Alien and Aliens. Hmm. Never mind the fact that, like, I just couldn't get behind any of the characters. I was just like, all right, yeah, why should I care about these people?
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'll mention another thing when we get to spoilers. Mm-hmm. But I just found this movie just boring. And I did not... I had such high hopes.
Hmm.
And also a lot of strange questions, like, why? Like, seriously, why?
yes, there's a lot of questions in this movie.
And not, like, I'm not... It's not existential questions, like, where do we come from? That's no, this right. is, like, why this?
Okay. So that's all you want to say right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, that's all I want to say right now.
Romano?
I'm sort of with Wally. I think I liked it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'm with him in the fact that this movie is one of those movies that makes you ask a lot of questions and then gives you very few answers. Mm-hmm. And I'm not
which,
sure.
Which is not unfamiliar with Damon Lindelof.
Well, yeah, the guy from Lost. Holy uh-huh. shit. Yeah, you should expect it. But I don't know. I feel like they ask a ton of questions and never really give you a ton of answers. And I think that hurts it a little bit. And, I think the other thing that hurts it a little bit is, like while I said, the Alien movies set up tension like really, really well. I can't even recall a single tense scene in this movie except for the part maybe where the two guys get left behind after the storm.
No, I wasn't even tense about that either.
Well, you weren't. Like... I got a little tense when they're like, "Hey, we're picking up a bleep. There's something alive down there with you guys." I was like, "Ooh." Like I was getting ready, like, but then it didn't really pay off.
That left an opportunity lost for me, which I'll get to.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sort of with Wally. I think I probably like it a little bit more than he did.
I think I liked it more than either of you two. I did enjoy this movie. I'll tell you one thing that's amazing is the cinematography. He uses every single frame of every single inch of the frame in this movie because his camera work is amazing because it's it just lets you see everything. Like at the beginning, the opening scenes of the landscapes, mm-hmm. the various landscapes that could just, it could easily be alien landscapes, but obviously they're filmed on Earth, but it's just, it looks so great. Even the character shots, everything is from farther back. There's not many close-up shots. So your eye is able to take in so much. I just think the cinematography, the photography is amazing. Yeah,
he really gave it, like, I mean, I think the other Alien movies had a very claustrophobic feel at times.
Because of the setting.
And in this one, I think that's another thing that kind of hurts the movie, is that the movie was very, they were always kind of in a wide open area, except when they were in those tunnels. But even those tunnels were very big.
Yeah.
Like, you never felt like, you never got that, like, caged in, the claustrophobic, like, I'm choking feel. You know what I mean? So I think that hurt the movie a little bit too for me.
Well, that also depends on what your expectations going into this movie are. You know, we'll get to that as well. I do think the first half does left me with a sense of wonder and foreboding, as I was really wondering where this was going. I was curious how does this all tie in? How does, you know, what is going to happen? I wasn't bored at all like you were, Wally. I was really curious as to how it was going to unfold. What did you guys think of the H.R. Geiger design?
I've always loved H.R. Geiger's artwork.
But within the movie?
I saw very little of his touch, artwork, really? Art design-wise. Hmm. Maybe in some of the alien helmets the giants wear. And like when they're actually seeing like different parts of what's underground. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's Geiger's influence is practically nowhere.
Well, there was that one shot when they get into that... they get behind that first door and then you see all those little containers on the floor.
Yeah.
There's almost like this mural uh-huh. on the ceiling.
Yeah.
I thought that looked very alien.
Well, what about the control room for the alien ship? That was very Geiger designed.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
It was a huge part of the movie. So I thought everything on the alien planet was very reminiscent of H.R. Geiger. I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. It seemed to even used it more than in this movie than in the first two Alien films. No?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the performances by the actors, especially Noomi Rapace and Michael Fassbender?
I'll give them their credit where credit is due. I think they were good. I mean, Noomi Rapace, last time I saw her, she was in Game of Shadows. Uh-huh. The new Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah.
And it looks like she put on a little bit of weight for this to make herself look a little older.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Fassbender, I mean, come on, it's Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, that's
really
true.
Really, when does he not deliver mm-hmm. the goods? I like their performances. I just wish they could have been in a better movie.
That's probably my favorite part of the movie was actually the main character's performance, specifically Noomi Rapace and Michael Fassbender. Okay. I don't know the actor's name, but her boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
I thought all those guys had plenty to do. I thought where this movie lacked and where the Alien movies are also better is the supporting cast.
Yes.
I thought in this movie they had very little to do. And
yes.
Almost criminal to not use Idris Elba, I believe.
True. Idris Elba,
He had barely anything to do, and it was criminal. Like,
yes.
I feel like in the other Alien movies, it was part of the charm of the movie to like introduce this like ragtag group of people that, you know, whether it be like, you know, they were mercenaries or like techie guys or, you know, they always felt like they had more to do. And in this movie, like they kind of introduced it to them, say the 17 people on the ship. And I really feel like there was maybe 10 people, maybe or less on the ship.
By the way, Logan Marshall Green is the other guy.
The other actor.
About.
Yeah. He was fine.
I agree with you about the cast, the crew members on the ship. In the first Alien movie, there's, what, seven people or something like that?
Yeah.
And they all feel like these blue-collar workers like that you would find on, like, an offshore oil rig or mm-hmm. or a huge construction site or something like that.
Yep.
They had that feel to them. In this movie, they didn't really feel like that. I think they tried to get that across with a couple of the people, but they really only got that across with their costume. Like, maybe a trucker hat and sleeveless t-shirts.
Yeah.
But other than that, they didn't get that real feel, you know?
And you really don't really get to know them that well. So,
yeah.
Like, when inevitably they end up getting killed off,
right.
You're like, who cares?
Right.
Like, whereas in some of the other movies, you might have, like, you know, liked some of these characters, and they had some personality, where these guys just were kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, they had nothing to do, so it just kind of sucked.
Literally, they do nothing. They sit on the ship.
Yeah, and they do try to introduce them in the beginning when they're getting briefed on their mission, but it just isn't done well enough. But, you know, that might be left on the cutting room floor for another huge extended edition by Ridley Scott.
I'm sure there'll be an extended.
I'd like to see what Charlize Theron's Scott is supposed to do, because I can sum her up in like four sentences.
Yeah, very disappointing.
I'm in charge. You're not in charge. Yes, I am in charge. I want to have sex with the captain. I'm still in charge.
Yeah. Charlize Theron, she represents the corporation that sent these people on the mission. I don't think that dichotomy between the scientific nature of the mission and the corporate greed is played out in this as well as the original Alien or Aliens. It's really played out well in the first two movies, especially Aliens with Paul Reiser.
Yeah, you know, trying to PR it and spin it and get his hands on the on the goods.
It's just not done as well. I know that you probably got to count a lot more, but I just want to point out a trope in this movie.
Go ahead.
The examination of the surgical booth and the safe pod in the beginning. Lord knows that'll come up later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
However, they did do the same thing in Aliens when they teach Ripley how to use the load lifter. You know, that you knew that was going to come later. So I'll give that a little bit of a pass, but still, it was just a little too on the nose, you know?
I mean, that's something that every movie does. I can't fault them too much. I mean, how silly would it be if, like, they didn't show it at all, and all of a sudden it just happens to be there. We'd be complaining about that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what the hell is this thing? This is, like, really convenient that they have this on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd be saying that if they hadn't shown it. So I don't feel like it's that bad a thing to kind of just briefly they probably went over it for like a minute, if that.
But it just seemed a little too obvious, you know.
And plus, that thing is involved in my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Okay.
Which is, I think, maybe potentially a spoiler, so I won't
talk about it right now. But... you know, there are some themes that are explored in this movie.
Lots.
I think. but what do you think about the theme of faith?
Nope.
Didn't work for you.
Nope.
No. Why not?
I saw no religious context in any of this. It was more of a scientific movie. Like, where do we come from?
Well, I thought Noomi Rapace's character.
She's a scientist,
but she also wears the cross.
That's her ex-fiance's cross.
No, wasn't it her father's or something?
That's why. I don't think it was hers. It belonged to somebody. I think it was her father's. Yes.
Yeah, because I know when David goes to take it from her later, she loses her mind over it.
Uh-huh.
But that, just because she wears a cross, doesn't mean there's any sort of religious context in the movie. I didn't see any. Like,
well, I thought her whole journey was like maybe wanting to believe what her father believed, and then, but also realizing that maybe there is no God, and maybe there is some other way to explain why we exist. Or,
well, we should explain the opening scene of this movie. It's not a spoiler because it's the opening scene.
Uh-huh.
You know, after it goes through a number of these awesome vistas that I explained earlier, it shows an odd-looking alien, a humanoid alien, standing next to a waterfall and looking up at supposedly his spaceship leaving a planet, most likely Earth, and him drinking this substance, this gooey substance, that in turn pretty much eats him from the inside out, and he disintegrates slowly into the waterfall, and then you see in the waterfall his I guess DNA spreading out into the water.
Yep.
That leads you later on in the movie to think, wait a minute, is that where humans came from? Is that how humans evolved?
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, creating the debate of creation by design or creation by a higher power as an almighty being.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it does try to lead you to these questions. But I kind of agree with you that it doesn't leave answer enough. Although I didn't find it nearly as boring as you did, Wally. I thought it left you with enough questions to keep you moving on through the movie. It propelled you enough. And it just left everything open-ended. And maybe a little too open-ended for some people's liking.
I'll say I was never bored, but I did really criticize a lot of people's motivations in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I really feel like a lot of the characters weren't fleshed out very well, and it just kind of seemed like they made decisions
Yeah.
that w weren't really like
Wise?
warranted or
Yes.
wise,
Yes.
like Wally said. I just felt like people just had r very little reason to make the decisions that they
S
did.
seemed like some of the decisions were only to make the plot go forward.
Pretty much. Like, there was no substantial setup or, emotional reason. It just felt like it was
Like
just thrown in there.
the two people who get trapped in the room because of the sandstorm.
Yes.
Their motivations, their reasoning for doing what they do, kind of silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, very silly.
Kind of silly.
I mean, but without them doing that, the movie doesn't go
Not much
far.
logic there. Nope.
We may have to get into spoilers where I want to mention a
Yeah.
few other things, but if you and that's all I have really to
Was
say
there anything
before.
else you wanted to say before we get into
I'll wait
spoilers?
for spoilers.
Okay, spoilers it is.
Right, spoilers.
Okay, well, I do want to mention that if there is no sequel to this movie, there is a huge gaping plot hole at the end. The end shows a space jockey with an alien bursting from him
Yep.
in a place that is not even in the original Alien when they first encounter a dead space jockey.
Yeah.
It's not even the same place, not even the same location. However, it is a completely different planet because in Prometheus, the planet is LV-223, I think, and in Alien, the planet is LV-426. So, I guess if you're there's no sequel and you're reading into it, as Ridley Scott has said in the past, for this movie, it takes place in the same universe. It's just not a direct prequel.
Yeah, well, it also ties in with the fact that, also at the end where you discover that there are other ships. So there is, the idea that events similar to this have happened,
Yeah.
on the other planet,
What about the idea of showing the evolution of the alien beings?
I hated that.
No, I like
You
that.
liked it, yeah. I liked it as well. Although it did kind of leave me with a, do we need this? Kind of like, did we need an origin story of Anakin Skywalker and the Republic and all that kind of stuff with the Phantom Menace? There was almost too much explanation to me. Too much showing of the evolution.
See, I liked it because I don't know if you guys got this from it, but all right. So my favorite scene in the movie was that surgical unit, that highly advanced surgical unit that can pretty much perform any kind of emergency procedure.
Except stitches.
Ex No, it did do stitches. It did
No,
staples. Yeah,
staples.
okay. Well, anyway, at one point, Noomi Rapace's character gets an alien inside of her, and she has to program the machine to give her like an emergency cesarean se C-section, and when the alien comes out of her, it's almost like this squid-like like larval stage of maybe what an alien like an because it came out of a human. I got the sense that that's what it would look like. But at the end of the movie, when it comes out of one of the advanced humanoids, it looks more like almost like what the aliens we've come to expect look like. And I thought that that was kind of cool because it's almost like saying like, hey. She almost caused this advanced stage of the alien by setting that humanoid up at the end, getting infected, and then, because he got infected by
Yeah,
that, like
the space jockey,
the space jockey,
the engineer, if you
the
will.
engineers or whatever, like that's why it was in its advanced stage, and maybe that's where the aliens are going to continue to advance.
Yeah.
I mean, I got that from it.
Speaking of that surgical scene, was it very believable that she just could keep on going after the surgery?
Well, she acted kind of like she was hurt for a
Still, think of how much
while.
shock your body would be in after that kind of
Yeah.
invasive surgery. However, and once again, in Aliens, is it really believable that Ripley can hold on to the rails as the alien queen is being sucked into space?
Yeah.
No. So I was able to suspend my disbelief when I remembered that, because there are a few times you have to suspend your disbelief. We were going to say, those two scientists that get stuck in the room because yes. of the sandstorm. Now, what do? They
try to pet an alien.
They try to pet an alien by saying, "Hey, buddy, what's going on?"
And the thing is, his thing goes, that's a cue to leave.
Yeah, you would think that these people that they chose for this mission, this trillion-dollar mission, would be briefed and expected to perform with some sort of I don't know, hesitation.
One of them's a geologist. He only knows about rocks.
And their motivations what killed me, because they both act very scared to be there alone.
Yeah.
And what do? They go exploring.
Yeah.
I'm like, why wouldn't you just stay put, wait till the storm is over,
yeah,
and then your boys will come pick you up?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, obviously it's a movie. It's got to progress. There's always stupid characters in the movie that you're just like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the reason they're in there, like to make the audience go, holy shit, these people are stupid. I'm way better than them.
Yeah.
You know? But even worse is the motivation of Idris Elba's character.
Who is the captain of the ship?
The captain of the ship. At the end, what does he do? Like, there was no setup for that.
Yeah, there was no emotional payoff, because he sacrifices himself and two other crew members.
Yeah, and they're totally happy about it. Like, hells yeah, let's do this. Like, yeah,
there must be stuff on the cutting room floor that explains that motivation a little bit more.
Because he does practically nothing in the movie. There's no
plays the accordion.
He plays an accordion, yeah, and he hits on Charlize Theron's character, but. I mean, I really didn't feel any kind of emotional impact with that, or like I even cared.
That's right. So the two scientists are stuck in that room again, and Idris Elba is communicating with them, and also talking about looking at a 3D map of the area that they're stuck in.
Yep.
Along with the other chambers in that area, and he notices something that. You know, caught the censor's attention and explains it to them. But I thought that could have been a great scene to kind of reflect go back to recall is the word I'm looking for. Recall those sensors from Aliens, yeah, and Alien, those sonar detectors, yep. Uh-huh. You know, that could have been a really great scene, you know, tense scene, but they didn't carry out on that, and that's a shame. I think that was a lost opportunity.
It started as out as a kind of a tense scene, you're thinking something's going to happen, and they just kind of abandoned it.
Yeah,
it was a weird choice.
It was an odd choice. I want to go back to that surgical scene, because it threw me off, because it started out with her lying on a table and two doctors ready to do something to her, I guess, and she knocks them out.
Uh-huh.
I really thought that was going to be a dream sequence, but it kept going on, and it was juxtaposed with one of those dead scientists coming back to life and wreaking havoc.
Yep.
I just didn't think it was really edited. That scene was edited well. I think it could have been a lot more effective if it was just her and in the surgery, because
mm-hmm.
that guy coming back from being killed, the scientist, yeah, and coming back to the ship, that was, it's just out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't see why that needed to happen, you know.
I'm gonna nitpick this a little bit, but I'm sure you guys will explain it like right away. But I felt like David's motivation, Michael Fassbender's robot character.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about him yet.
I felt like his motivation wasn't explained very well. Now, I realize he's a robot, and he could be doing things based on how he's programmed.
Yes.
Correct? Because I'm not completely 100% familiar with the... I mean, I've watched the old Alien movies, but I don't remember quite how the androids or the robots act. Like, if they're just... They kind of can make their own choices, or are they just pre-programmed with choices?
Well, we have to go back, because this expedition is funded by a corporation called the Wayland Corporation,
mm-hmm.
who is which is owned by a what was it called? Peter Wayland, who's played by Guy Pearce in the worst old man makeup I've ever seen.
He was completely unrecognizable. I didn't know it was him at first.
I thought it was like Michael Fassbender in old man makeup. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like a whole creating robot out looking like me thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the credits were rolling and I saw Guy Pearce, I'm like, when was he in this movie? Yeah. He plays Peter Whalen, a very old Peter Whalen, who owns this corporation and sends this mission.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has developed the android, the robot known as David, played by Michael Fassbender. And they show a couple of scenes of David speaking with somebody, but you don't know who it is because it's only a one-sided conversation that, yep. that we see. So it leaves you wondering, well, who is he talking to? So, and then later on in the movie, it shows him helping... it shows David helping Peter Weyland into a wheelchair. And that's kind of out of nowhere. And it was kind of like, well, why did he have to hide? Why did Peter Weyland have to hide himself for all this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there was a reason why he had to hide. But, I mean, I saw that coming from a mile away. Charlize Theron's whole arc was... I mean, anyone could see that coming a mile away. Yeah.
Oh, and her delivery of... her saying the word father, awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
I mean, come on. She didn't even have to say it.
It's also unnecessary dialogue given the way the scene is shot.
Yeah.
You know? You don't. She didn't have to say a word and you could just tell that that was her father. Yeah. You know what I mean? But, I mean, as far as David's motivation, he started out very subservient and just kind of like willing to do whatever they asked. So he just seemed like he was this, just, you know, a butler pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, a butler robot. And he would just do whatever the crew wanted. And then out of nowhere, he discovers, like, the aliens, and it seems like all of a sudden there's something else going on in his mind. Like, he's, like, something, like a switch went off. Like, hey, when I find this, I'm supposed to all of a sudden act this way.
Maybe literally a switch did go off.
It could be. I mean, that's the way I'm trying to explain it, but, or trying to, you know, understand it. But, I mean, the way he just turned on everyone all of a sudden just became, like, this like, evil robot. I don't know. I don't know that it was completely
I don't think
earned.
It was entirely evil. I think it was just, odd from a human's perspective, because he is obviously not human, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know. It was just weird how he would kind of waffle back and forth. Like, he all of a sudden he was really bad, and then he'd be helpful at times. Then other times he'd be like, no, now I'm not going to be helpful. Like, I'm like, I don't understand how he's making the decisions he's making.
This would imply that he's jealous of Numi Rapace's fiance.
Well, how can he experience jealousy? He can't experience
jealousy. He's not supposed to, but the thing is, he only watches her dreams. And he poisons her fiance with the alien spore.
Possibly under orders.
That's possibly under orders, like, but...
Go ahead.
By the same token, like, whenever he's looking at her or looking at her and him, his facial expression changes to that of, like, disgust or anger.
From a human's perspective, so... But maybe those aren't actual reactions. You know what? I don't know if I'm getting it across right, because... His like you said, his motivations aren't clear, and maybe they're meant to mislead.
Well, then he should play it like Brent Spiner does from The Next Generation, just completely the same expression over and over again.
Yeah, it's a lot of discourse. You know, the discourse that this film has created is amazing because there has been so much discussion online about. And there's so many links that purport many theories about this film and many questions, and as many questions as we have. And a lot of these I've posted on our Facebook page, but I have to reference an article from cinemablend.com, which asks a lot of these questions. And they give out their own theories, but I'm not going to read their theories. I'm just going to ask their questions, and I'd like us to discuss it.
Okay.
Like I said, it's from cinemablend.com. The authors are Katie Rich and Sean O'Connell and Eric Eisenberg. What is going on in the beginning when the engineer drinks the black goo? I had already given my explanation. What do you guys think?
I thought that maybe that's what they were going for, like the whole, like, oh, these aliens came here to, you know, to visit us and visit Earth, and they're the ones that are responsible for the primordial soup that early amphibians came out of and all that. But that's all, man. That's all I got. I mean, even then, I was still like, all right, so they couldn't find another way to do it other than, like, you know, killing one of their own to start life. And then by that same token, when you get to the end of the movie, when they're like, well, why do they want to kill us? The only conclusion that I come up with is that humans evolving was an accident.
Okay.
And
they didn't create them on purpose.
They didn't create them on purpose. This is like, oh, we didn't expect this to happen when we did this, so we have to eradicate this before this gets out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, humans are essentially a virus. Like they do, huh. Like they say in the Matrix. You know, they multiply and they move to low populated areas and then multiply again.
Interesting.
I came to the same conclusion as Wally, except I got a different beginning. I got the sense that the alien was left behind accidentally, and that the stuff he drank was kind of like a fail-safe if he were to be abandoned on a planet and had no way of getting off of
Kind of like
it.
a cyanide capsule.
Sort of. And by, by some accident, he takes it, falls into the waterfall, and that's what starts life on Earth. And sort of like Wally just said, it was totally accidental.
He looks like a monk though. He's wearing like a cloth robe and not
But
like
isn't he
the.
running at one point? Like almost like he's running to try to catch up because he was quite a distance away from.
I only
No,
noticed him right when they got
he's just
to the
walking.
waterfall. I only noticed him
It
walking.
takes the
But
robe
when the
off
ship
and.
takes off, it's like so far off in the distance. I felt like he was like abandoned, like or he just was accidentally left behind and just having no other course of action. He's like, well, he's like totally practically. Has nothing on him. He's like naked practically, and I mean he has no way to contact them. He just said, "Hey, I'm fuck this. I'm killing myself."
I don't know. I read it differently. I read it as if it was intentional.
Like he intentionally just wanted to kill himself.
Not kill himself, that it was intentional. Maybe that was intentional that he leave his DNA on Earth
But for what purpose?
to
So you're saying it's
create
not an accident.
life.
He tried to create
So
life.
he's dressed ceremoniously. He's
Not
not.
just him, but the race or the group that he was with, the
See, I
engineers,
don't
if
get
you
that because
will.
that doesn't make sense to me. Because at the end of the movie, like it seems like they want to destroy Earth, and why? What other reason would they want to destroy Earth if it wasn't an
We're
accident?
gonna get there.
All
We're
right.
gonna get there. Next question from this article: what does the black goo do, and why does it affect different people differently?
Well, I think that that black is the same stuff that's in those canisters that they find, oddly enough, with a giant head of themselves in that
Yeah.
one room, which that didn't make any sense, and. That's basically the like stem cell
Okay.
for the xenomorphs because you figure one guy drinks it he disintegrates, a human gets it and they get that little he gets like a snake thing in his eye,
Yep.
which turns into a four-legged squid, which turns into.
Well, it was in him. The virus was in him, and he had sex with her, and she had the squiddy thing in her stomach.
Yeah, but you don't see the squid thing. You see like a sneaky thing in his eye. When he's looking up close in the mirror, you see a snake tail come out from underneath his
Yeah.
from behind his eye and then zip back up.
Yeah, but that was
So,
after he had sex with her.
yeah. So he's got something sneaky in him. He gives her a squid, and the squid apparently skips the whole face hugger stage and gives you a xenomorph.
No. The squid thing is the face hugger. Remember at
Yeah,
the
the
end?
face huggers look like horseshoe crabs.
No. This was the precursor to the face hugger. This was what the face hugger had evolved from. Because you remember at the end when she sets that alien that was trapped in the pod on the engineer?
Yeah, the giant squid.
Yeah, the giant squid. That what did you notice that scene when it enveloped him, the engineer, the space jockey, when it enveloped him, there was the camera shot from overhead and you got the back easing oh and kind of
Yeah, it opens up all
oozing
those
over
like.
him, and it gave you that vibe, that same look as the back of a face hugger. You didn't notice
So
that?
I saw that being its face when he's looking at it and it's opening up this way and you see like all the little beaks and.
Yes, that was the part that went into his mouth and down his stomach and planted the thing, but the rest of it that enveloped him, it was like a very, very large face hugger. It was that was the like I don't know, like what the face hugger would have been years and years ago. That's what it evolved from. You didn't see that?
No,
It
I
didn't
said
matter to you, did
that at that point I'm just
it?
like whatever. And even then, like the compare and contrast with, Ripley wearing the exoskeleton and fighting the queen, as opposed to die, beep.
Yeah. But the black goo, why do you think it affects different people
It's
differently?
because it's stem cells. Basically, whatever DNA it gets next to it, whatever it will change based on a number of different varying factors.
Well, didn't it look like the engineer, the space jockey in the beginning of the movie drank that black goo?
Yeah, he drank it,
Yeah,
and then
so
he disintegrates.
it affected him differently, so it created humans.
Yeah, if you're going by that, yeah, technically you could create humans if they're actually on Earth. If they don't actually tell you where they're at the
No,
beginning of the movie.
that's true. Hermana?
I got pretty much what you guys got. It was
Okay.
some kind of like life making ooze, and it affects people differently based on your genetic makeup, your DNA.
Next question. What are those ghost-like apparition memory shadow creatures that show them what happened in the past?
Yeah, that made no sense.
It didn't.
I mean, yeah, they're on a ship, and you know, these it just seems like a way that they were trying to just fill in gaps, like story gaps to tell the audience, like, here's what happened, as opposed to leaving the hole. Because, like, when you watch the first Alien movie, you don't know what the hell happened.
Right.
Something happened.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even when they get to the other planet. Well, I mean, when they get to the, you know, the next stage in Aliens. But in the first movie, you have no idea what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Something is in there, and something's gotten loose, and it comes out at night, mostly. You know? But they don't tell you. They don't fill in any of those gaps with, like, holograms or, like, captain's logs or anything like
that.
Well,
that's because it seemed like David had the codes to bring that up. Because it looked like exactly what you said, a captain's log, a hard disk of what happened, you know? I thought the idea was kind of cool, but... Hermano?
I just thought it was kind of like just like maybe these guys, the engineers, I mean, they probably documented everything they were doing. I mean, they created this stuff, right? So they were probably doing a lot of documentation, and these holograms were just, you know, they were just, I mean, whatever they were using to document their, anything they were creating, it was just recording at the time when shit went bad, and that was just the playback. That's what I got from it.
Okay, fair enough. Why does David poison Holloway?
It's part of the experiment, because he needs to find a bridge to use that stem cell thing, because you see him analyzing it. And if, I mean, I was sitting fairly close to the front, when he's looking at it, you can see little speckly things inside
yes.
the drop on his finger.
Yes.
So he's basically come to the, I think, the conclusion that we did, that it's like stem cells. But he needs to put him in a viable, you know, he can't
host.
Do it, he have a host. He can't do it to Wayland, because that's
mm-hmm.
his boss. He can't do it himself, because he's a robot. The two people who are most likely to procreate on the ship.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because he realizes a relationship with them, and then they'll have sex and see what happens.
And he already knows she's sterile, because she's been reading her
uh-huh.
life reading, so he knows that she can't have kids.
Yes.
But he's like, all right, we'll see what happens if I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got what you guys want. Pretty much the people were brought onto this expedition as like scientists and geologists and stuff like that. Technically, they were all lab rats. They were all going to be used for experimental purposes. When David, you know, eventually finds, you know, the stem cell stuff. So I pretty much got that from it.
Guinea pigs, if you will.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was pretty much what Aliens, the second one, was too.
Yes.
The corporation knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So they knew it was going to be sacrificed. So, okay. Okay, next question. How does Janik know that the moon is full of weapons of mass destruction and is just a stopover moon for them to build weapons? Janik being Idris Elba, the captain. Remember, he figures all this out?
I got the sense that he was like somehow military trained
uh-huh.
to identify like bases of operation. I mean, I think he explains it. He says at one point, like, if you're an advanced civilization, you're not going to build weapons of mass destruction near your hometown.
Yeah,
you're gonna build it way off in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Kind of like we do. I mean, we build fucking missile silos in the desert. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I mean, that's all I got from it. I mean, he was just, I think it was just an educated guess.
That's a good point. Well,
yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, he got his piloting skills from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? He's not just like some sort of prop duster pilot. He's flying a high-tech ship.
Good point. Okay, if the moon visited by Prometheus isn't the engineer's home and it was an accident that led them to be stuck there, why did they have cave drawings that led them there?
I think the cave drawings were a product of visiting other worlds or different locations
Well, all the cave drawings were from different parts on Earth.
Yeah, so I think like wherever they visited before on Earth, you know, the primitive people found, you know, saw the engineers, these giants,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if you want to go into the whole faith thing, giants are also mentioned in the Bible.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a good point.
That they all see these, you know, these giant, you know, beings, and they point toward the stars.
Uh-huh.
But you're basically looking at something out of context when they look at the cave drawings. They don't have anybody to ask. And so they go, it's an invitation. Nope.
yeah.
Oh, man, I'm about to blow your mind.
What? Do it.
All right, this is what I got from that. Okay, so basically, the guy that dies in the beginning creates life on Earth. I think the aliens throughout history have come back to check on us. You know, maybe one at a time, whatever. And, I mean, because each of the drawings are from various years in human history.
Right.
Like, I think the oldest one was like 35,000 years old or whatever.
Yes.
And all the way up to, I think it was present day, one of them, like in Hawaii or something. I mean, it must have been present day. I mean, if it was from Hawaii.
Okay.
But I feel like maybe the aliens throughout history were kind of checking on us, almost like checking on our progress as a race. And maybe I think what they come to eventually, a conclusion, is that we're kind of a poison on the planet, and maybe that's why they decide to destroy us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's their whole motivation, is that they see people as like this, almost like Wally said, like in The Matrix, we're a virus. We're killing off all resources. We're fucking it up for the rest of, you know, life on Earth, like animals and trees and shit like that. And I mean, I think that's the eventuality that they come to, is like, hey, these guys were a bad accident. I mean, we've given them like 35,000 years. They haven't evolved except to create weapons that just kill each other, and they're off coming back now and saying, you know what, we got to fix this, and we got to destroy them. I mean, that's what I got from it.
That's a good theory. I like it.
Did it blow your mind? Is it mine?
No, because I read it other places.
Son of a bitch! I didn't read anything. That's my theory.
I can attest to that. I know for a fact that Hermano has not read anything else. So. Okay. Next question. Why does Wayland have to hide on the ship? I've already asked this one, but I want to explore this a little bit more.
Because I think the idea is that the whole ship is basically him trying to find out how to extend his own life, basically.
Yes.
If these guys get... If he can get immortality from watching whatever these guys do, then so be it.
Right.
Yeah, and he still gets to live.
I feel like he had to... Well, I mean, it's... It's explained in a holographic email that he tells that he's going to be dead by the time they read this email, which is like 2 years later.
Yes.
I feel like he had to pretend to be dead to hide his motivation for what he really wanted, which was like some kind of like fountain of youth or some way to sustain his life because he was dying. I don't know that they would have gone on the mission if they knew what he was really up to. Maybe that's why he hid. I can't think of any other reason why he would fake his death.
Yeah. First of all, they explained a couple of times that this trip took cost $1 trillion. In 2083, I think.
2093.
2093.
Yep.
$1 trillion does not sound like a lot of money.
No.
It does not sound like a lot of money for this huge spaceship that goes...
I think that ship would cost a lot of that.
Yeah. More than $1 trillion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's the next...
Do you remember the movie Contact?
Yes.
I think that the ships that they built, that there were two of them, that they cost like $1 trillion a piece, you know, something like that.
So you're saying Ridley Scott didn't step it up enough?
No.
With or the monetary figures.
Yeah. Okay, once again, why cast Guy Pearce as an ancient old man? Why not just use... an old person, or or anything like that.
Because we want to win the Oscar for special effects makeup.
Well, that's not gonna happen.
Honestly, you were criticizing the makeup. I didn't think it looked that bad, except that his skin looked rubbery.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it looked bad.
Do
you know that there's a lot of viral marketing for this and videos of Guy Pearce, you know, as he looks now as a younger Peter Weyland, giving speeches about the company. Did you know that?
No, the only viral video I saw was it actually had to do with Michael Fassbender's character, David.
Okay. Yeah, so supposedly there's been a few... I have not seen any of these viral campaigns for the Wayland Corporation. Since they've already shown him as a younger man in these viral campaigns, maybe that's for the sequel, for showing footage of him as a younger man as well?
Maybe.
You were so uninterested.
I was so bored. And then even at the only thing I said, they built a damn good robot back then, because that same damage would have destroyed the other two androids in
What damage are we talking about?
Where David gets his head ripped off, you know, completely from the rest of his body unit.
Well, I mean, pretty much the same thing happened to...
That's happened to like all of them.
To Bishop and to Ash.
Yeah, but, and they stopped functioning.
No, they didn't.
Really? I thought their heads continued on.
Yeah, Ash's, they got his head to work again. And then Bishop,
Wally's right in a sense, because they did stop working for a while, but then, yeah, they fixed them to... Then they reconnect them.
No. Bishop kept on going. His upper body was his arms and his face was still working, but yeah. It was Ash that they had to reconfigure his head.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movies, so I have to go rewatch them.
Next question. Why did the engineers suddenly decide to destroy Earth? You've already experienced
it. Yeah, I would say my theory.
Now, you know that in the movie, in Prometheus, they did explain that something happened. Oh, no, that the bodies that they found of the space jockey that they found was about 2,000 years old. Could that somehow tie into Christ and them being upset with crucifying Christ?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. No, this movie lost me very early on.
Yeah, I'm right on with that. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, and why would Numi Prasna take the smart thing and be like, holy shit, there are monsters on this planet. I should go warn somebody. No, I'm going to go looking for more monsters.
Well, she was so motivated by her anger, you know, and her emotions that she just wanted revenge, pretty much.
Way to fuck up the rest of the human race there,
Well, she wasn't. Shah. I don't think she was motivated by revenge. I think she was motivated by, like... She just wanted answers.
Yeah,
like, and then Dave makes a great point. Like, what do you care about the answers? Like, they want to kill you anyway.
Well, he says it in such a placid tone that you know that there's probably motivation of his own to keep this mission going. You know.
Plus, he could never understand her motivation. Like, he was built. Like, he doesn't know what it's like to like question your very being. Like, right. I don't know.
Right. The last question that they pose in this: why? What did David say to the space jockey to make him so angry?
I kind of wish that was subtitled.
Yeah, I do too. Cause,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, three conversations going on at once. Yeah, David's conversation with the monster, her conversation with the engineer, and when Wayland trying to tell her to shut up.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if he even understood it. Because I mean, was it really well explained? Like how David was able to like somehow figure out their language and like how to open doors and stuff. Like, I don't feel like that was set up very well. Like, it didn't really say like, hey, he just said he studied like, I don't remember exactly what they said, like stuff throughout history. And I'm like, I don't know that he should have been able to figure out their language.
Their technology, or not their technology, but their cryptographs looked very hieroglyphic. So it looked like it could have been something he could have easily deciphered by combining or utilizing different old languages.
Like dead languages or something? Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
Like cryptography, like these days, where, you know, numbers and letters, you know, you have to decipher them to be able to figure out what the encoded message is. And he did the same thing. He's like, all right, well, I know all these pictograms from ancient Egypt. I know all of these cuneiforms from, you know, from Sumeria. I know all this stuff in Sanskrit. And it's kind of looks like a mesh of, you know, all of them, because they were in different locations.
How about the end when... the spaceship is crashing, and it's Charlize Theron and Noomi Rapace running away from it. Noomi knows exactly what to do by running to the side.
Charlize hate crap is just like that. I hate again, shit like that in the movie. The thing is falling right behind you.
Yeah.
You run like 10 feet to the side, you're going to dodge it. And then they're like just running like, oh my God, I cannot run it. I hate shit like that.
Yeah, I feel like I was robbed. That teaser poster that I saw shows the ship exploding. This great big fireball in midair. I got a rolling donut for a climax.
Oh man, I really enjoyed this movie a lot more than you did. I think the unanswered questions aren't bad enough or don't dangle enough for me to hate this movie or be bored by it. I kept going on through it.
I was definitely not bored. I mean, I liked it. I just didn't. It's not one of those movies that even now, a couple days after I've seen it, I haven't thought about it that much.
Huh.
You know, it's not like this movie. I don't think it's ever going to be as iconic as the first and second Alien. Me personally, I don't think that.
No, you know, I guess there's a lot of other, like I said, added material online, viral marketing, and a website and all that kind of stuff. But you know, a movie should stand on its own. You shouldn't need all this stuff to help support it. You know, would either of you be interested in seeing the director's cut to see if there's any other stuff left?
I'm curious to see what's on the cutting room floor. Yeah, absolutely. See what else they took out maybe
and
that.
This movie was, what, like two hours and 9 minutes or something like that? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't terribly long, but, you know, Ridley Scott's been known to add like an hour to movies. Yeah, so it's 124 minutes. So, yeah, it's just over 2 hours. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
The cinematography was great. The movie looked great. The soundtrack was fine.
I thought it looked fantastic. Did you know that he is 75? Ridley Scott is 75?
I didn't know that until Ronnie that went to see it with us. He mentioned that, and I was like, wow, really? I mean, I imagined he was older, because, I mean, he obviously was making movies in the... I thought he was maybe in his mid-60s, but I didn't know he had 10 years on that. So.
Yeah. So, like I said, who knows how much more energy he's going to have to create movies with this scope, you know? He's going to be doing, supposedly, a Blade Runner 2, you know, the sequel to Blade Runner.
Is it a sequel or a prequel?
I think it's a sequel.
Sequel, okay.
He's probably, and he, I think, has another movie before that.
I hope they at least have an outline of what he wants to do. So even if, God forbid, he does pass away.
Remember that Damon Lindelof helped to write this. So he would be a key figure in this as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd love to definitely, I mean, they definitely left it open for a sequel.
Jesus, look, he has a lot of movies as a producer as well, but. He has a movie called The Counselor, which is in pre-production right now, set to come out next year, and Untitled Blade Runner Project for maybe 2014.
Wow.
So as a director, he only has a couple of things in the pipeline, but as a producer, you know, he has tons of stuff in production. So who knows how much, if he's going to have any involvement in that, or if it's just going to be his money directed towards it. But would you be curious for a sequel?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
after this, it would take a Saman twisting to get me to go.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, man.
Maybe, because, you know, I remember seeing Kingdom of Heaven, which he directed, in the theater, and I thought that was an awful movie in the theater, but then I hear so much of how great the director's cut is, but it's like over 3 hours long. And I have it in my Netflix queue, so I'm going to watch it soon, eventually. So I'm really curious about that, you know, and maybe it'll improve this. I don't think it needs much improving in this movie. I think it just needs more questions answered in this.
I think some of the characters need to be fleshed out a little bit more.
Yes, agreed. Anything else you guys want to add?
That's all I got.
No? That's all I got.
Okay. Grades, Wally?
C.
C. Hermano?
I'll give it a B.
Yeah, I've been waffling over this for the last couple of days now, whether I want to give it a B or a B+, because I think there's really a lot to like in this movie. Like I said, the cinematography, the production value of this movie, I think the designs of every little piece of design in this movie. Like, I did like the spaceship, the Prometheus spaceship, because it did harken back to the original spaceship, the Nostromo, you know, especially the interior.
Yep.
You know, I thought they did a great job there. So I don't know if B+ sounds too grateful for. I'll give it a B+. So I guess it averages out to a B-.
B-.
Would you say?
B minus B.
Yeah, because I'm not giving it a strong B+, so B-. all right, that's the official first time watchers. Grade of Prometheus is B-. It's in theaters now, both 2D and 3D. Did you guys?
I saw it in 2D. I'm not doing any more
2D as well.
Yeah, me too. I saw it in 2D. Although I do hear the 3D is good because it was filmed in 3D. So if you want to shell the extra money out, I'm sure you won't be disappointed. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you'd be interested in. Keep looking out for those Prometheus updates. I'm posting a lot of those.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Oh, and you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. Please download our episodes on iTunes. Feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for a movie for us to watch, send a tweet, email us, post on our Facebook page.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing the Ty West film, The House of the Devil.
That should be interesting. Oh, First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.
look who just got an iPhone. Ooh, pretty iPhone.
I see pictures of my dick.
That iPhone's not big enough for pictures of my dick.
This is to be continued.
Wally is insane.